What up, good people? What's going on? My name is Adon Bean. You are tuned into Off the Record. It is Three the Hard Way. To my left is the good homie, Dan Duncan. What up, sir?
Man, it's good. It's hot.
Yes.
We've been talking about that a little bit off mic. Mm-hmm. Dude, I'm done with it. I'm done with summer. Absolutely. My skin can no longer take any more sun. If you don't know, I have a red beard, and I'm not meant for it. So,
I did just notice you got a little tint. You got a little...
Bro.
Got a different hue to you, bro. Got a different hue to you.
It's like three shades from Jesse Williams. Yeah.
I get extra Scottish as the summer goes on, and... Yeah, I just spent 5 days in one of the hottest places in the world, which is Disney World, with millions of my least favorite people. But you know what? It was all for the kids. I have an amazing niece and nephew, and I needed quality uncle points.
That's
so I just got back from taking my niece and nephew to apparently the most magical place in the world. And
that is what's up. Now, is that... Magic Kingdom?
Yeah.
Okay.
Magic Kingdom, Epcot.
There we go. So pivoting to Tragic Kingdom, you, David Perdue, were in
transition.
What?
That was amazing.
You were in a Midwest
spit take. That's how good that was.
You were in a Midwestern city.
I was in the Midwestern city, man. I was in Detroit, Michigan.
That's what's up.
My second home, my grandma. I was on the east side of Detroit, if anybody's wondering. Mm-hmm. It's different. I was out there. I remember being there as a kid, and Detroit was super black. And now I saw a flower / ice cream shop.
Okay.
All under one roof. I drove by, I said flower and ice cream. I was like, do they mean two different places? And we drove by, and I was like, no, they mean one place, because it was just like, it was just white people and hanging out with their dogs outside of this flower. And I was just like, we are 2 seconds from my grandma's house. Like, there never used to be anything like that over here.
So our property value has gone up, is what you're saying.
Definitely. No, like, my grandma literally stays, like, all right, I remember there's a DIY TV network.
Yeah.
What is it called? Like, something rehab attic or something like that?
Sure,
attic.
Yeah.
Where they fix houses. So that lady, like, fixed out literally behind my grandma's house. So that lets me know, like, oh, y'all switching it up, huh? Y'all switching it up, man. It's like, it was fun, though, man. I got to, you know, hang out with some family, hang out with my little cousins. My little cousin is just, you ever meet a kid that's just too much already?
Sure.
Too much. This kid said this. He said, hey, come out and watch me run. Now, most kids are done. You're like, oh, he wants to see me run.
Sure.
He said, come out and watch me run so that you can be impressed.
Yes.
I was like, you already a little ham. Like, what if I'm not
so
impressed?
So that
you can be impressed.
Yeah.
He was fast, though. He was really fast. I don't even tell him
impressed.
That.
You were impressed. Yeah. Give him something to strive for.
Yeah, let's hang out, man. Hang with my grandma. My grandma has a magical power, I found out.
So
my grandma, I've tried to do this myself. My grandma can make any child stop crying by just being like, hey, cut that out.
Okay.
And even they don't even understand words yet, they're like, oh, she ain't playing. And they just don't cry. I've seen this for years. I thought I was making it up. It was a figure of my imagination.
Right.
I saw it happen this past week. Everybody was like, how's this happening?
Yeah.
The kid's mom was like, Steve must stay with us. And she just talks to him.
Yeah.
And they shut up. I tried it, and it worked a little, but it's not the same.
Yeah. Well, there's years of seasoning in there.
It's fear. I'm still afraid of my grandma. She's 86 years old.
That's what's up.
I'm like, I get very nervous. I get so excited. That's how you know I love her. I'm just like, I don't want to disappoint you at all. And my presence must be a disappointment.
Now, is this the grandmother married to the grandfather you speak a lot about?
No.
Okay.
So that's my dad's family all in Detroit.
Okay.
His grandma is, but she's OG. She, what is it, 7 kids she raised? My grandfather, I never met her husband. He died. My pop's like 14. So, like, she raised like 7 kids.
Man,
okay. Was with 7 kids, east side of Detroit.
Yeah.
Solo, like, but people on the block know.
Yeah.
I saw my granny one time chase a dude down the block who might have stole a watermelon. It's not a game.
Wow.
It's not a game.
Yeah.
This is OG great. I love her to death.
That is what's
great
up.
Time. But again, Detroit, man, it's not as bad as people are saying.
Hey, I believe it.
It's bad, but it's not. It is. Don't get me wrong, but it's not as bad.
Oh man!
This is just a weird thing about. I don't want to harp on Detroit like that, but this is the weirdest thing I've seen. Mm-hmm. The level like the immediacy of change between one street to the next is something I've never seen before. Gotcha. I've literally seen, it's almost like trash will stop flowing once it gets to a certain part and blow the other way. Like, it's, I mean, like, I mean, literally, like the slums are one side of the street, and across the street there's like $1 million house. I've never seen anything like this. There's like this place called Indian Village.
Okay.
Which is like less than a, I'm telling my dad, pops, like less than a quarter mile from where my pops grew up. And I think like Aretha Franklin and like used to, like huge people live, these huge houses. They look like some of like banks. Mm-hmm. And it's less than a quarter mile than some of the worst parts of the, I'm just like, how? Like how, you know, it's just weird. America's a weird place.
America is a very weird place.
No one's talking about this.
I'm definitely talking about it because I just watched the Republican convention.
I was about to tell you, that is another Midwestern city that has seen the best of times and the worst of times.
Yeah.
The best of times was a little over a month ago. The Cavaliers won. I just wanted to make that point.
Throw that in there.
The Cavaliers won. But what also happened is that Cleveland lost because the RNC came last week and showed up and showed all the way out.
Man.
And I was doing a quick perusal of 4th District Facebook statuses, and upon such, I stumbled upon yours, Dan Duncan, and it had said that you had renounced your lifelong allegiance to the Republican Party. Is that true?
Yeah, you know.
Or am I overstating?
No, you're not overstating. Being a Republican, it was a little bit like my parent, like, it's like religion when it's like given to you as a child, like you are going to do this thing. That's a little bit like being a Republican was in my family. Like you don't have a choice. This is what you're going to grow.
It's like Cardinals fans, like St. Louis Cardinals fans.
They
get passed down. Yeah, they get passed down.
I was baptized into the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And I'm not ashamed of that. I think there's a lot of really amazing conservative, fiscally conservative ideas that are very powerful and are rooted in the Republican Party's platform and have been for a long time.
Yeah.
That Republican Party is dead and exists no longer. In its place is now a National Socialist, unfortunately most akin to the Nazi Party pre-murdering people. Is really, you know, is where Donald Trump has led the party's platform, because the Republican Party is now out of control and Donald Trump can create whatever platform he so chooses. And it seems like people are willing to accept that. And to be honest with you, I cannot rock the revisionist history that is the Republican Party, that's trying to bridge the gap between the historic Republican Party and then the current one, and saying that they're one and the same, because they're not. And so, yeah, as far as like rescinding and sending the paperwork, I'm absolutely, I don't identify myself as Republican anymore. I'm definitely kind of checking that independent box from this point forward.
I got you. I think what was interesting about last week is that I didn't watch it evening by evening. I woke up to text messages from my mother, who I come from a family of my grandfather was a Republican lifelong, and so is my dad as well. But again, based upon older ideas of what the Republican Party stood for, my grandfather went to his grave always, this was the party of Lincoln, and my grandfather lived long enough to have seen the impact of that. Right. My dad was 99 years old when he passed. So it's a long time that he saw the development of that party or whatever. That being said, I feel like even for the casual non-political observer, the RNC provided a lot of highlights. Like David is laughing.
Right.
I mean, I think like every single day there was just something new, and you could talk about, and you know, I'm just going to throw them all out here and then y'all can pick them apart as you like. But I mean, you could talk about, okay, you had the fever pitch doomsday prophecies of Rudy Giuliani and the like foaming at the mouth of Chris Christie, who was the spurned lover of Donald Trump. It did not receive the vice presidency that he shilled so hard to receive. Right. So you have that. Then you had Melania Trump come through with the heist of the century, not seen since Bring It On, right? Of the lifting of Michelle Obama's 2008 speech, which I thought was very interesting with the with the campaign denying it occurred for 2 days and then saying, okay, yeah, it occurred. This is what happened, but it wasn't her fault. Like, I just, it was like such an about face. It was like, well, I mean, words are just words. I don't know what, it was just very interesting. Yeah. We'll go back to that. And then, then you also had what would be the closest to the second runner up to the nomination. Ooh. With Ted Cruz, Lion or Ted, as Donald likes to call him, Lion Ted.
These nicknames are the best.
Came through.
This dude would kill it on third grade playground.
Playground.
Oh, Lion Ted. Oh, Ted Crooked Hillary. What?
Ted Cruz came through and spent his entire time up there really not
evading
the just issue. not endorsing Donald Trump at all. And then I thought it was interesting is that not only not even like hours later, Donald Trump said, I knew that he wasn't going to endorse me, but I let him speak anyway. Big deal or something like that. It was just very interesting. I don't know what was happening there. I don't know where to begin. I just wanted to throw all that out there. And that is not even mentioning Donald Trump's speech.
Yeah.
In and of 45 itself.
Minutes of nothing.
40, no,
it was
40,
an hour and 8 minutes.
Is that how long it was?
Hour and 8 minutes of everything that he is going to do for us without any details of how any of that is going to happen.
Somebody said he did, it was 7 things. In an hour, he mentioned 7 things.
Really?
Only. Seven things. You got an hour and 8 minutes. If I had an hour and 8 minutes of time, I only did 7 jokes. I'm never, they're never going to invite me back anywhere. Anywhere. Seven points of interest. Anyway, I'm sorry.
That's everything though, guys. Like, yeah. What were your thoughts about the entire week? It was crazy.
I'm gonna start with Rudy.
Okay.
Oh, Rudy Giuliani.
Eight ball Rudy.
Yo, listen, cocaine. It is a listen that he is on something.
For sure.
He is on the finest of cocaines.
The finest China white. The finest all
China
of the
white and all the way. That dude got up there and you could tell like he was feeling it. Like he never felt such power before. You can tell when somebody's getting hype and they never felt that before. Mm. Like you could just see it and he's like, oh, they're loving me. I haven't felt this in years. Like, you know what I mean? He just kept saying stuff. Yes. And like he was like shaking when he was talking. He was so passionate. I'm like, you're just yelling. You know what? All of these speeches, it just remind me how funny really old, angry white people are. Really? Really? Just when they get angry and they are really old, it's like, you don't know what to do with it. It just comes out and your body does weird stuff.
Borderline, decrepit,
slash. Yeah, your body comes out in weird ways. It's just, man. And the weirdest part about it, I left this thing somewhat respecting Ted Cruz. Never thought
who thought that was gonna happen?
Who thought that was gonna happen? This is the weirdest. I'm in the weirdest time of my life. I don't know what's happening. I'm very afraid.
So obviously, I was glued every night to the TV. Really hoping that Gary Johnson would like somehow manage to change the entire idea of the RNC and gain their nomination as a miracle. That did not happen. Mm-hmm. But I was glued to the TV the entire week, and it was this sideshow circus phenomenon. Like, you know, we as historians, I got my degree in history. I think for the longest time we've tried to describe like how Rome fell and how the mob took over Rome. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. We got the mob was televised for 5 straight days.
I don't want to agree with you there.
And it was insanity, man. People calling for Hillary Clinton's imprisonment.
Right, lock
like,
her up.
Just like people like
Barabbas. Oh, give us Barabbas.
Yeah, that's what it felt like.
It was insane. And I will say it was so funny because I won't throw anyone individual under the bus, but I was with my in-laws family on this vacation, and very much there's a few of them that are hardcore Trump supporters. And I literally was in debates every single night. I'm the card-carrying Republican in the room, and I'm sitting here like, you guys can't be serious.
Yeah.
You can't be watching this. And then dealing with, oh, of course she could say the same thing, because why couldn't she be raised the same way Michelle Obama was raised? And just all of the... And I love how Trump supporters have taken this mainstream media deal that the mainstream media is against him and framing him negatively. I'm like, what TV are you watching that is framing him negatively or has been a negative detractor to his platform. All I see is positivity being thrown his way, and I don't even know what to do with it anymore.
I mean, I think there has been a turn to make him negative in certain lights, but I think it's been after the already dangerous grace period he was given to get the to get his foothold. You know what I mean?
Too far.
And what I mean by that is he was given the outlet to do things that no other candidate running for that position was able to do. He was able to call into morning shows, right? And like espouse for, you know, time upon time about his platform. Like, they never required him, certainly on Fox, they never required him to like come in and like actually like sit down and have to face any strong cross-examination or anything like that. But regardless of that point, I feel you. I say that as people, I know so many people who still identify as Republicans, people who still certainly identify as conservative. And I know so many of them who are disheartened because they are like, this is not my party. Like, this is not what I signed up for. And this is not reflective of my values. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so there's, you know, so I think even in our conversation, you know, it's even important to highlight the fact that, like, I recognize that there are many people on all sides of the political spectrum who do object to what they've seen. But the problem is that there's a reason that this was given kind of an outlet in this part. You know what I'm saying? It's just kind of
he's speaking to people who felt like they're unhurt, mm-hmm. and he's just giving them the pizza party that they want. Man. We're going to have a pizza party.
Yeah.
He's giving a pizza party. I think one of the things that was very interesting to watch was, and this never happened at the Republican convention, where he acknowledged the LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm. First time.
And when, like, right. And it's Trump that's doing, like, that's the crazy part about it. It's like, wait a minute, he's doing something that everybody has come around to, mm-hmm. but you're also the madman. You know what I mean? But
sure.
Even when he did it, it was very funny when he did it, because he goes, the LGBT community, he was like, oh, okay, I'm glad y'all are okay with that. Like, he said it. It's like, this is where I lose them. And they're like, what? Oh, I feel like after that moment, he was like, I can do anything.
I can tell you anything. I can tell you anything.
Like, that was, I don't think he believed until that moment. Like, I think up until that morning, he was just throwing stuff out there, and everybody was like, yeah, and he was kind of feeling himself. But when he dropped, we gotta protect gay people, and no one out there decided to, like, nah, like, shoot at him or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't tell him nothing no more. And you already couldn't tell him nothing. He's an even more invincible candidate now, and it's very scary.
I do feel like I buried the lead a little bit, because what I did not mention, of course, is that Chachi spoke.
Yes, he did.
Oh!
Okay. Charles in Charge came to the table and gave us his thoughts, because what people fail to realize is, just like black people have a Where's Ja moment, white folks as well also have moments where it's like, where's Chachi?
We need more Chachi.
We need Scott Baio to tell us what we need to do in a situation like this. Like, fam, I thought that the strangest moment I'd ever seen in political theater was when, whatever, 95 Crip keeping old Clint Eastwood was talking to an empty chair.
Yeah.
I thought that was the strangest thing I'd ever see. But alas,
I
was wrong.
I pray for the days of the chair.
I want the chair back.
Give me the chair back.
What was going on, man? Scott Baio spoke. What was it? Fran Tarkenton spoke. It was so many random people who showed up.
Does anybody like me? You too? Please come.
He paraded his children out there, and everyone, you know, espoused the speeches of his kids. And I'm sitting there like, these are his kids, and they haven't told you a single nice thing about him.
Yeah.
They said that they admire him for X, Y, or Z, mm-hmm. but never giving actual examples of how those things being true.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the most bizarre thing in the world. And then the thing that broke my back was when it was the revisionist history of starting to say that the Republicans were the party of the civil rights movement. I forgot exactly who said it, but it said it, and literally, so my tweet went out literally seconds later.
Interesting.
Where I was like, oh, I'm done. Okay, I'm done. I cannot be part of a party that literally can't even own its own, like, dirty laundry,
yeah, yeah.
to say, hey, look, let's not pretend that we, like signed the Civil Rights Bill of the 1960s.
Right.
Like,
right, right, right.
But that's the thing. They can't, like, they're preaching to a choir that they can pretend to. That's the sad part of it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you've set it up to where the people in that audience are mad at a man who's saying, vote your con, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
How dare you go against the party, even though they're talking about, we have to unify as Americans. Mm-hmm. No one there is, they're Republicans first, Americans sure. second.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And absolutely. That was the dangerous part of what I'm saying. It's like, you don't care what comes out of any of these people's mouth. As long as you're like, you're pro-Republican, we're down with you. And yeah. no one's being, no one's sitting back and analyzing any of this. They're just blindly following the star of The Apprentice.
Well, and what's so interesting is every time you get in one of these conversations with another Republican that's, you know, pro-Trump, then the very next statement is, if you don't vote for Trump, even though all of this craziness, Hillary will be elected.
Sure.
And that has become the number one argument. And I'm sitting here like, when did politics become this thing where we, you know, we accept this in order that this doesn't exist?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, this is not what we should be signing up for.
And that was one of the cool things, again, about Ted Cruz. To his credit, he got out there, got booed for it, but he was like, we can't win this election just telling people, you know, bad about him. You have to sell them something like what we're about. Yeah. We're not telling anybody what we're about.
Right.
We're just saying we're not about this and we're not about. I was like, where did all this sense come from? You can't talk this sense in front of these people? They don't want sense. All
right, so let me like moderate that just a little bit with Ted Cruz, because I thought it was, I like, on one level, I'm like, I respect it, right? Because it's like, yeah, you go
takes
up in front
a lot of balls
yeah,
to do
yeah.
that.
And here's the thing, right? What no one has ever been able to say about Ted Cruz is that he's not principled. You can hate those principles.
Sure,
right?
Sure, sure.
You can be in opposition of them, but he's always been like, I stand on these things.
Right.
Whatever. But the thing that I thought was interesting about it is that when he was given word about, like, you know, after the fact, and they talked to him about, like, you know, we recognize now that this was, of course, post the speech. Mm. You know, we recognize you actually didn't endorse Donald Trump. Like, what were your thoughts about that? And really what he pivoted to was the personal attack.
Yeah.
He pivoted on the fact that I will never.
I'm not going to.
You drag in my wife, or you drag in my father, then all bets are off. I'm not, you know, I'm not bound by what I said before. And I'm like, yes, I understand as a man just wanting to support your wife and wanting to support your, but that's not some principled thing for this country. That's because you felt offended because your personal family got dragged into it, which, okay. But like, you know what I'm saying? I'm not going to overpraise that part of it. I just recognize that that's what it was. What I also thought, though, was interesting is this had to be probably the first convention I could ever think of where there were no past presidents who spoke.
None.
Like, none. Like,
the previous four presidents will not endorse him.
They all, I mean, and it was, and you start looking like, man, if Romney was running, it would just look so much better in terms of, like, someone who you actually had an understanding of, someone who, like, understands economy, foreign policy, domestic, like, it's just crazy, man, crazy. But I thought about this, though, too, and we'll pivot here because I think that it is interesting. One of the questions I always had about, even about the Cruz situation, is he was being praised as well by some very strong and ardent Hillary supporters for his principled stance. And I wondered if they would have praised or would praise Bernie Sanders if he got up there and did not...
We're going to find out tonight. We going to find out tonight.
He's already come out and said
he's already endorsed her.
We need to endorse her. We need to get in line here. So,
but I did think it was like an interesting thing to say, like, okay, you think that's laudable in this situation, but you were very mad about Bernie continuing to run after it was mathematically impossible for him to win. And it was very much like, you know, he just needs to get, he's going to tear our party apart, whatever. Right. Like, I kind of found that, I thought there was kind of a, like a, I don't know, a dissonance with regard to like what you, a cognitive dissonance with like what you're saying you want to see. And then when it actually has some meat in your life, I don't know, but I don't know what your thoughts were about that in general.
Yeah, I think you have to talk about the fact that they're politicians. And I think, on one hand, Cruz knows, or is betting the house that Donald Trump is going to get his ass handed to him come November. And Bernie Sanders is betting the house that Hillary Clinton is going to win, and therefore both playing a political kind of chess match with trying to position themselves in line with the future president.
Yeah.
And Ted Cruz positioning himself as someone to say, look, I told y'all we shouldn't have supported him.
Yeah.
And now I'm the leader of this party because all y'all got it all wrong.
Right, right, right.
So let's get on my back, and now let's, in 4 years, we'll tackle this thing again, and we'll kind of go back to my principles. And he's, I mean, in my mind, when with like 2 minutes left in the speech, I was like, oh, this is his presidential speech for 2020.
Pretty much. Yeah.
And you kind of just sensed it, and no one else in the room, everyone else in the room was frustrated by it or whatever. People that were watching with me, like, how could he do this? He got invited. He needs to endorse him. I was like, no. This is his presidential speech for 2020.
Him and Kasich are the like ones that can say we didn't toe the line, right? I mean, very, you know, people who were staunchly against, you know, Rubio came out and and said, oh, kiss the ring. Yeah, he kissed the ring.
Kissed the ring.
And you're just like, okay.
Chris Christie.
All right.
Who talked all that mess. All
right.
It was funny to see Chris Christie talk about, do the Hillary chant. And somebody was like, well, what about you and that bridge?
Right.
He was like, what? You don't know nothing about that. Like, he tried to pull that. What's that over there? And then, like, go. It was just like, I'm like, what? Nobody there is grounded in any kind of reality. They're like, where is everybody smoking the best things to smoke and just walking around high? Like, there's something's in the water, man.
It is interesting. I will say, you know, as we move on to the DNC, I think, which starts tonight, I think it starts, I think Michelle Obama speaks tonight.
Yeah.
I think Elizabeth Warren speaks
tonight.
And does Bernie speak as
Bernie
well?
Bernie speaks tonight.
That's right.
They want to hot.
Yes, they want to flank the, like, they want to get the strongest progressives in line early and then build up their narrative upon there, because that's when you see a convention that's run appropriately, that's the way they look most of the time. Yeah. We saw a bad one just now, but I did think it was interesting because what we also had, I think it was late Saturday night, early Sunday, we had the WikiLeaks, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
of I think it was over like 20,000, it was a bunch of emails that from the DNC that were leaked on WikiLeaks or whatever. It has been rumored, of course, unproven, but rumored that this, that the hand behind this are the Russians. Okay. Because there was I can't remember how far that story goes back, but just that there was the security breach that occurred, I think maybe 8 months ago or whatever. And nonetheless, the connections being made there. But all of that is to say what was found was that there were some very problematic, very damaging, I think, language and words and intentions that were being expressed by people who worked for what were supposed to be ambivalent arbiters of the process in the DNC. They were very much in the bag for Hillary, actively thinking of ways to campaign and things to bring about Bernie's political downfall. One of which I thought was pretty damning was them suggesting that in the Kentucky and I can't remember what the other state races were, that they should that they questioned his religion and questioned his belief in God and thought that if they could bring that out, that he probably doesn't believe in God, that wouldn't play well with those voters in those areas. And I just thought that, man, this is very, very, and again, all of this was headed by Deborah Weiserman Schultz, I think is her last name.
Yeah.
She has since stepped down, resigned, and also has since been picked up to lead Hillary Clinton's 50-state campaign strategy. It's getting me mad. So, I mean, it's a mess, man. It's a mess. But it was interesting because for so long, Bernie supporters had been saying, yo, this rigged, like it's against us.
Yeah.
You know, the people are going whatever, and they would be shouted down roundly. But this seems to suggest that there was at least some truth to that. What were your thoughts about all of it? I guess.
Honestly, my only thought is I'm happy Donna Brazile is in charge of something. I always rock with her. I just always rocked with her. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I mean, I'm not surprised at any of this. You know what I mean? Like everything in this. Everything is crooked.
Okay.
It ain't just crooked Hillary. It's crooked everything. Everything is crooked from the DNC to the RNC. Like, it's all crooked. So when this came out, I was like, why are we surprised?
Gotcha.
We don't, you know what I mean? Like, what? It was clear evidence that this was happening. You see these pictures of these mass Bernie, you know, these Bernie rallies, and then he doesn't get the press, you know what I mean? He doesn't get the same press. Like, you just understand where the money is. You understand where the money, the people are going to put their faith behind the money. Hillary Clinton's got all the money. Like, it's very interesting, too, to see, like, how Bernie, I'm anxious to see how he does calm the storm tonight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because does he bite the bullet?
Yeah, does he bite the bullet? Like, how he bite? Because he can't be, because he got booed earlier today when he said we have to endorse
by his own supporters.
Sure. They was like, you know, and they're like, we're not bought. And people are like, these Bernie not for you know, for sale type things. I think, I mean, honestly, it's the whole DNC is a mess. Like, even the idea, like, I saw, like, how outside of Philly there's like a gate that stops people from like protest, like going in, which I thought was so interesting because, like, they're literally, there's a gate to stop people from getting in for people who are going to talk about how bad a wall is. You know what I mean?
The irony.
I'm just like, this is yeah. Are we not, who's writing this comedy? Like, that's, I'm just sitting there like, who's for writing sure. this comedy? It's just right. I don't know. I have so many thoughts, but go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, so I may have rescinded my Republican allegiance, but in no way, shape, or form can I co-sign anything that's going to come out of the DNC this week. It's not surprising to see that the DNC was behind the one candidate that could actually beat whatever Republican candidate was offered up. Mm. Bernie Sanders, if he had somehow managed to, you know, edge out Hillary in any way, shape, or form, he would have gotten killed by the least candidate in the history of the Republican Party, which happens to be Donald Trump. I mean, he's the least liked candidate in the Republican Party history. What's so crazy is that in both parties, we have the, like, in one election, we have the most unliked candidates in the history of this country.
Donald Trump, I think, has the highest disfavorables ever, which is like at 64%. And then the second highest in history is Hillary Clinton at like 57%. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, yeah.
Yeah, like, I'm curious how, because, like, before we got on air, they were talking about, you know, the whole platform is like how the DNC platform is like, you know, we're not about the 1%, blah, blah, blah. And Bernie, the whole time, was like, well, I want to see them reports that Hillary, when she was talking to these banks.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
And so, like, how is he not going to justify endorsing her? We all know she's tied to all these things. You know what I mean? That being said, Bernie or bust, people.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
I got
like,
you.
That is the stupidest. Like, I think I tweeted it. It's like it's literally like Bernie and bust people are the people who are like, you wanted pizza, and then you're like, you can't pizza, and you have a ham sandwich, and they're like, well, I'd rather eat a shoe. Like, I'd much rather just eat a shoe than the ham sandwich. Don't eat the shoe.
I got you.
You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't make, like, that mentality. I understand principle.
Mm-hmm.
I understand principle, but there's no way on God's green earth we can allow the star of The Apprentice to be in charge of nuclear weapons.
So
like, are we hearing this?
Because you see how well he does with the Twitter account that he's in charge of.
He's live tweeting the DNs. That's what's also,
yeah.
Oh, which is genius, by the way.
He's very genius.
He's a perfect troll. I think that's what's interesting, though. My thoughts about it were like a couple, like twofold, I guess. One is that I don't know. Like, he, I'm not surprised also that the DNC was behind Hillary Clinton. And I'll say that for, like, logical reasons.
Right.
Like, which have to do with things that, like, that Bernie has to own up for, in the sense that, one, like, one, whatever was said behind the lines, like, they didn't cast votes for those people. Right.
Right.
Hillary Clinton still beat him. Like, right. From the popular vote, if you just tallied up all votes, it's not even close.
Right.
Like, it's not even close, right?
You can make a good fight, but he ain't win.
Yeah, but he ain't win, right? And so, like, they didn't change those numbers. But the second part I'd say is that, like, so Bernie Sanders and Bernie Sanders supporters are surprised to find out that he is being spurned by a party that he only just started to care about now that he started to run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you've been an independent for your entire career. Like, so now all of a sudden you're like, okay, I'm going to be a Democrat because I'm running for this office, which is the highest office in the land. Hillary Clinton has years of service right. to the Democratic platform, party, has built up relationships over the years. I've always said this, that there's tons of things to dislike, loathe, and hate about Hillary Clinton with regards to her policies and actions within public office, but you can't say she ain't prepared.
Yeah.
Like, oh, she's worked yeah, for where she's at. She's worked for all of these things. And so at the end of the day, and that is, like, to me, one of the largest contrasts between her and Donald Trump is where I'm like, you could be terrified of what she's going to do and not like it, but she at least would know what she's going to do.
Yeah.
I don't know what Donald Trump is going to do when he gets in office.
Nobody does. He ain't told us yet.
I think I tweeted this out. At best, we're going to get, at best, Donald Trump is Richard Nixon 2.0.
That's a high hope. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm at best.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
This is also the only president that's ever been impeached.
Yes. Right.
People are out there like, oh, Dan is behind Trump. No. Don't hear me.
Right.
I think that at best he could be impeached.
You saw him trying to outsource the job of presidency to John Kasich.
And then he claimed that he was the justice and.
Oh yeah, like it was what did he say? I know that he was just
law
like
and order.
Law and order. The last president to do that. Would anyone like to take a guess? Nixon was the last president to be the law and order candidate.
Man.
So at best he's Nixon and at worst he's, I'm going to say it, the president for Review for Vendetta.
Of course. Everybody take a drink. But no, absolutely. It's just, it was crazy. So I'm backing up to say that with that whole DNC leak, I thought that some of those, the language and the intentions and the waves that they went about, I thought was completely beyond the pale and, you know, appalling on those fronts, because they're presenting this front like and have been standing by this, that we are independent 100%. So that, you know, sham was exposed. But I also am like, yo, Bernie, like, your message, as much as it resonated with a lot of people and a lot of people who were first time people who hadn't considered voting or looking left and like, absolutely resonated in a lot of ways. But, yo, like, legitimately did not win. It legitimately did not take. There's reasons why it didn't. There's ways in which I feel like his message failed with African-Americans for reasons that have to do with him not being able to draw connections properly and not knowing how to speak to our issues. I'd say that. But beyond that, I just think that, like, yo, you were independent for your entire political career. Like, and you were okay being that based off of where you, what you represented, like the constituency you had. You didn't have to be, you know, you could be the Lieberman of the situation, you know what I'm saying? And never have to do that. But nonetheless, man, I feel like it was just a time of receipts, man. And I think that the DNC, we will certainly see a more organized campaign. Interestingly enough, with all the concerns about protest at the RNC, we will probably see more of them at the DNC this week because people are fired up, upset. But I do think it will be interesting as it plays out, and we will probably revisit it.
I think one of the interesting quotes I heard, I think it was like a Bernie, former Bernie supporter said, what Bernie Sanders has to do, literally all this time, he's just been feeding his followers Mountain Dew. And now he's like, but y'all got to go to sleep now. You know what I mean? And it's like, that's the perfect analogy. Yeah, it's like you got them all fired up on Mountain Dew and now you tell them to relax. Well, they're not going
to
relax.
I do think, just to kind of, you know, disagree to some extent, I think what the Republican Party has shown us is that you're going to reap, and I think what we're going to talk about in general tonight is you're going to reap what you sow. So the Republican Party is now reaping Donald Trump, and for the last 8 years, again, like railing against Obama, we are reaping what we have sown in fear and in hate.
Yeah.
For 8 years of sowing that, we now get Donald Trump. And I think that, you know, in this moment, it may look like Hillary's on top, but what the DNC is sowing is a distrust in its own constituency. Mm-hmm. That it may pass this time around, they may get it, but next time around they need, and people aren't sure between the two candidates.
Yeah.
And it's not as clear cut where you have two, you know, more like mainline Democrats and the DNC kind of pulls something like this and there's a distrust. I think that you could have a fractured Democratic Party down the line because of this. And so I think both parties, I mean, again, what goes around comes around.
Yeah.
And I'm not a puns, but yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
All of that's true.
I feel like out of the two parties, just to talk about what goes around comes around, you just look at like, I look at it like just from a sports aspect. It's like the Republicans remind me like the Yankees, like now, where like there's no, like you had this history, but like there's, you got nobody coming up. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like you invested a lot in Trump, and that's like, that's your like overspending for like, you know, different players. And but like, as bad as like the Democrats are, and it's not looking good, they're like kind of like, I guess I'd be like the Braves in a sense, where it's just like, it ain't good right now, you're just making it work. But like coming up, there might, you know, there's at least more faces that are like, they can fix this, like, you know what I mean, whether it's like Cory Booker or different people that you could throw and people can actually get behind. What's, you know what I mean? And like maybe unify the party. And it just doesn't seem like that.
Yeah.
Because all the people who were supposed to be that challenged Trump, like Rubio and like they're,
yeah.
Rubio, this should have been his election.
Mm-hmm.
Coming off, like, you know what I mean? And like we don't even know anything about him anymore. Like he's gone.
Technically, it should have been Jeb's, right? And then it should have been Scott Walker's. And then it should have been, there was such, like, all the conversation 2 years ago, 3 years ago was just how heavy the star power was with the Republican Party, because there were so many strong like governors and so many strong senators who had these voices and things like that. It was just like, man, they're going to have such a deep bullpen coming up to right.
do, and
to,
solid to, records and solid, in their states.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Solid records.
Going into and fiscally and what transforming.
And what this has shown, if more than anything, is that like that a lot of times those local politics don't translate nationwide or whatever. Mm-hmm. Scott Walker is a terrible campaigner. Had no idea how to present himself on a major stage or whatever, even though he had all of these like bona fides that would gird him up with the party or whatever. Yeah. And then, you know, when we looked at the Democratic Party, we were like, man, there's nobody out there. You know, it's after Obama, it's a long drop. You got maybe Cory Booker. You got the Hispanic twins, I think. I don't want to say Castro in case it's wrong, but
you, Google them. We know
Google
who
them. Yeah. But nonetheless, it's just been interesting how all of this has played out. But I do think the sports metaphors are apt, as we have definitely had a lot going on in sports as of recently, sir.
Yeah.
Transition. Transition, man. So what's been going on? We've had some vocal people.
Vocal people. I want to start at the top though. I never thought I would see the day when Michael Jordan cared about anything other than selling shoes.
Okay.
But as of today, like it almost feels like a bad, like this was a joke written in a barbershop in 1999.
Okay.
You know what I mean? What I mean is like, I feel like if somebody in 99 say Michael Jordan would care about police and black lives if there's a two-term president, black president, you know what I mean? And then like, it seems like
ain't never gonna be a two-term.
Ain't never gonna be a two-term black president. And it's like, well, I guess he should be talking about, you know, black lives and police officers at the same time, because today he did it. Michael Jordan, let's face it, he was the anti-Ali. He was the opposite of, like, for all his greatness.
He was the OJ that OJ wanted to be.
Whoo. I never put it like that, but that's kind of true.
I think he certainly fell in line with OJ's line of non-advocacy for a long time.
Essentially, OJ recently today came out and put, and not only did he say Michael Jordan, excuse me. Yeah. You got me. Excuse me. I got my J's wrong. O&M is very, listen, not very far enough, but they're very close together, but they're worlds apart. MJ recently came out to say, basically said, I could no longer stay silent, which already it was a plus, right? The fact that he said, I can't stay silent about what's going on with police. I can't stay silent about what's going on with these black men being murdered. But then to put his money, his beloved money, the money that he got because Republicans bought shoes too.
That's what he said.
He took that money and then put his money where his mouth is and gave, what was it, $1 million to...
He gave $1 million to the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, okay. Right? Which, so that's targeted money going there. But then the second million went to a police sheriff's organization that focused on community policing, right? So it focused on retraining and promoting dialogue within the communities that the police force, you know, interacts with.
Yeah, which was very, I think that was important to where he put the money. Like the legal defense funds were important, but like to put it, not just to give it to officers, but like to say, Because that money is saying, I feel like it's saying, I acknowledge that there's a problem here. Mm-hmm. I want to put my money toward the problem that I think we can all agree on with these officers. So, but I mean, like I said, there's no, you never thought you'd see Michael Jordan.
When I read this, I thought that he was visited by the ghost of Christmas. like at the beginning of Scrooge, when the ghost shows up and it's like, these are my chains. I'm pretty sure that someone showed up in his dreams and said, these are your chains there, MJ, you might want to do something about it. This is insane. And I think it's definitely gonna help him sell shoes. Sorry to like demonize a very nice thing, but I think he's gonna sell some more shoes in the process of doing this. And again, Am I impressed? I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm not. Like, this to me is a very calculated thing.
Yeah.
That again, it makes sense. Is it nice? Sure. But
it seemed very timely too.
I don't believe people change, so I'm like very cynical when it comes to this. Like, what's the angle here?
Man, so the Christian doesn't believe in lives changing. Just gotta call that out real quick.
No, I thought it was the timing was not even a week after they pulled the All-Star game from Charlotte.
They did.
And I don't know.
He spoke to that as well too when that happened. He gave like a small statement because he of course had made some but nonetheless continue.
No, I was just I don't know if that played a part into like, all right, we need some kind of good press coming out of Charlotte. And then he did, you know what I mean? And like maybe that was a thing. I don't know. I really am like at a loss for words to see Michael Jordan.
We realized that $2 million is like the interest that came off of, I'm sure, his investment fund this past year. Yeah. Like him giving that away and getting a tax write off in the process.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was like,
so I go two ways with it. I understand that point. I'm also like, little money for someone else doesn't mean it's not big money for the people that's receiving it. Right. So if Bill Gates sent me $50,000, that is shit to him, but that is everything to me. I'm like, man, thank you. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, I don't necessarily get into the like how much did it hurt him to do that or whatever. But I do think there's some interesting things and some interesting components there that go along with that. Right. Like I think with Michael Jordan, I like applaud it from the perspective of like, man, happy he did something. That's cool. I thought the statement was, thought his statement was actually kind of that, like what he actually said about it.
You didn't like it?
It was just
I feel like I like it only because I set my bar so low.
Maybe so. Maybe
you know
so.
What I mean? Because I'm literally looking at it now, and it sounds almost like a politician.
It's very much. I mean, he says, as a proud American, a father who lost his own dad in a senseless act of violence, and a black man, I have been deeply troubled by the deaths of African Americans at the hands of law enforcement and angered by the cowardly and hateful targeting and killing of police officers. I grieve with the families who have lost loved ones, as I know their pain all too well. No way that I can impeach the fact that he lost his father. Right. Absolutely. You know, all of that. It's always magical how black people just end up dead, whereas the police officers were cowardly killed and whatever. Like,
facts.
I hate the way that is brought about on like as though it's balanced in some way. And it's not. Like, that language means something, right? Like, those people just didn't end up, Freddie Gray just didn't randomly die.
That's what they're saying.
You know what
I'm saying?
Right. That's what they want us to believe, right? Alton Sterling just didn't randomly die. No, like, at the end of the day, we have to start calling these cops cowards, because they're cowards when they behave that way. They're punks when they behave that way.
Right.
Just as any of those people, those men who, the two individual killers who killed the ring of, you know, the bunch of cops in Dallas and Baton Rouge are cowards and hateful. And so I just think that, like, that hedging of bets and the way that, like, at anger, like, deeply troubled by the deaths of African Americans at the hands of law enforcement. And so you're troubled at those deaths, but you're angered at the cowardly and hateful targeting.
Yeah, important.
Man, go somewhere with that. Yeah. That's nonsense. Yeah, like, okay. I don't buy that at all. Yeah. So I think that's trash.
Listen, like, no. I don't listen. Again, I'm speaking from I never thought I'd see, like, it's literally like, I'm just happy he said anything.
Sure.
Like, you know what I mean? Maybe I'm probably not going to be as critical, because I never thought I'd see the day Michael Jordan put neither time nor money to anything that had any real merit, you know, merit. But all that to say, I do agree with you. Like, the language of that is kind of trash.
I mean, but at the same time, I am also like, yo, that money is important. Like, I'm glad that he is saying something. And I'm not someone that criticizes someone for showing up late to a party just because they showed up late to the party. Like, I'm happy you showed up. Like, thank you. Yeah. You know what I mean? I ain't about to, like, get mad at you for showing up late. At this point, I'm just, thank you.
I do want to say this, though. I feel like he's, I wonder how much Melo had to do with this. Melo signed to Jordan, right? Mm-hmm. I know they've had talks. Melo has been one of the most active NBA players as far as communicating.
This round. Yes, he has.
Because the reason why I'm setting all this up to say, like, Melo and D, you know, what you call them, Banana Boy.
Yeah, the Banana Boy Boys.
Everybody, they're getting a lot of credit. Is still the funniest. They're getting a lot of credit. But I would be remiss if I did not shout out the WNBA players.
Sure.
Black women be holding us down. Let me just say that. As a black man, black women be holding us down. I know WNBA isn't all black women, but it's 70% black women. And so I'll just say
and there's a lot of white women who are also in support. And, like, completely.
Who lost checks. You know what I mean? Who are willing to lose checks that we all know they don't make as, you know what I mean? They're not making the money that Melo was making.
No.
And I don't think Melo would make that move.
Don't believe what Sanaa Lathan and Love and Basketball would have you believe that the WNBA checks are going to support you.
Yeah, they're not. Because they play year-round. They play in Europe. And So the little bit of money they're making is like, no, this is way more important than anything else that we're... Yeah, we're going to play a game, but this is way more important.
And the refusal to answer any basketball questions. Yeah. They were only going to take questions that had to do with that advocacy of police brutality and whatever. Like, yeah, absolutely. Like, those women deserve much credit. Yeah. So much, like it was
I feel like they led this charge. You know what I mean? Like I said, and fortunately, thankfully, the WNBA rescinded those fines.
They did rescind those fines because they knew it was looking really bad. The optics of it were looking bad, and I think part of it was interesting because when the initial protest that they were behind happened, they wore shirts that really weren't much of a statement. It was
the blanket, a fairly,
it covered everything.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It covered. Philando Castile, covered Alton Sterling, and it covered the five police officers who were killed. And then it said, starts with us, and it said Black Lives Matter. Like, fairly benign statement. You know, how do you,
misconstrue it?
Yeah, how do you get upset with that? But that, of course, didn't matter to some punk ass cops who were just like, they saw that and they were like, I'm off duty. I'm an off duty cop, and this is an offense to me, and I'm going to leave. Like,
they were running security.
They were running security,
so
yes.
Literally leaving their post, which is...
Leaving their post. Again, I'm tired of coddling that.
Yeah,
like, I'm tired of coddling that in all of these conversations. We have to spend 5 and 10 minutes talking about how not all cops are bad and how so many... And how there are some good ones in the force. I'm like, yes, I know that.
Duh.
But I'm tired of having to have all of this, like... All of this preamble, all of this disclaimer before I get to the fact that, and by the way, in case this offends you, I'm sorry to say there's some of you who act less than ideal. No, like, they're trash. Like, let's call them trash. Because they're behaving like trash. And when they do stuff like that, then you have the head of the police union over there, like, went further and started dissing their league and talking about how, like, you ain't got, they don't have no fans that show up.
I'm just straight like, up hurt dogs.
So I just think that that's garbage. That being said, yes, those WNBA players, I thought that was really powerful. I thought that what Michael Jordan did was a great action. And I think that was awesome. And I agree. Like, I never seen, I couldn't, here's my thought about Michael Jordan doing this, right? A couple things. Two, I never thought that, like, I couldn't foresee this happening. And with that, I feel like some people can't even allow him to be an advocate in their mind because he's always been the ambivalent Republicans buy shoes through. Yeah, like, always, like, shot. So, like, it's kind of like, what do you do when that foil of a person is not that anymore? Right. And so some people, I think, are overly critical of him just because They don't know how to see him as anything other than a capitalist, right?
Right, right.
Then I think the other side of it is that, okay, cool, that's Michael Jordan did that. So what white athletes are we running up on now and asking them to talk about stuff?
That, now that, that is, I saw somebody, that is my biggest, that's the one I wanted, like,
Why do black athletes have to be the only ones talking about this
Everybody wanted to talk about how dope the ESPYs was, but, like, can you imagine if, like, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, I don't know, Kevin Love,
J.J. Watt,
stood up there and said the same thing? Because we know that these black, they understand, we know they're going to say this. Like, I've said it before, this issue with this, it ain't a black people issue. You know what I mean? We didn't set this, you know what I mean? It's not our, so it's like, how powerful could it be if a J.J. Watt said, you know, I stand with these athletes, or like a Tom Brady got out them Uggs and was like, yo, also, I stand with this. Or Peyton Manning, you ain't got nothing else to lose now.
Or anything, they could, if someone wanted to come out in support of the police officers,
yeah,
they could do that too, but they never have to answer for anything. Like, yeah, they never have to speak to any issue having to do with this. And my thing is that, like, dude, like, this is not, it'd be one thing if this came, if all of these extrajudicial murders and killings were happening in one section of a black part of one major metropolitan, but this is a nationwide issue.
Right.
So you mean to tell me that no one from New York, from Chicago, from Baton Rouge, from, like, you mean to tell me that these people aren't from everywhere? I know I'm from Northeast Ohio. I can rattle off tons of people who went through the Ohio State program who now play in the NFL. And they don't have nothing to say about Tamir Rice. They don't have nothing to say about John Crawford.
Right.
Like, they don't have to say anything about that.
And I think the discussion has to, at some point, it has to, those athletes, maybe more so behind doors, but those, like, Banana Boat Boys, as you said, they've got to come to those athletes and say, where you at?
I'm saying.
Because, you know what I mean? Because, like, I'm not saying you do it publicly, because that's something, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But, like, at least, like, where are you at? Because this is not, you have to understand, it's not just our problem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like, if you really want, you know, like, you don't see a tweet, nothing. There's not, like, hush, mum's the word. And it's like,
yeah,
really?
I just think it's, I think it's interesting. I think it's telling. I think it's telling because I just think it says something about how you view the problems in this country and how you view that these things don't have anything to do with you to some degree. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that you think along those lines, but let you work in leagues with 70% or 60% of the labor force is of, you know, could be in this situation. Like, I just think that's telling in very interesting ways. And the fact that they are allowed to be silent, they don't have to speak to this. I just think it's a problem that they're not just complicit in, but the media is complicit
in. No one
will. And the public is. The fact that we own, like, the fact that we devote so much mental energy to, what is, you know, is Michael Jordan going to say LeBron, something? Yeah. Is LeBron going to say something? Da, 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 da. And that we as people are not like, yo, I'm curious about, you know, what is Dirk got to say? What is, you know, any of these stars who are out there, what does Aaron Rodgers have to say about this? You know what I mean? And I just think that that is its own indictment of a lot of
this. I'm starting to think, when on any issue, I'm trying to think of precedent where there was white athletes coming together and saying this is an issue, because like there was precedence in the 60s with like Ali, Bill Russell, Jim Brown, you know what I mean, getting together and being like, this is what we're gonna do about a certain issue. I'm trying to think sports wise like when there was a time where there were non-athletes of color who got together and say, this is an issue that we need to get behind because this is a problem.
Well, I think that part of what happens, and that has to do with, like, I think dominant culture in certain ways, right, is that, like, there's nothing that directly binds whiteness in that way where like, a bunch of white athletes have to come together as a unified front in that whiteness. Now, that said, I think that there are tragedies that happen that athletes who are white speak about, right?
Right. Like, so it'd either be like, so you're right, so it'd either be like a tragedy or the military.
In that person's city
or the military. Like, they'll all be behind the military.
Something along those lines or whatever. Yeah, and so I think that that's what happens a lot of times. I'm sure that there's athletes who were white who spoke probably about or at least tweeted something about the tragedy that occurred in Orlando.
Right.
You know what I mean? Just because they might have had ties to Orlando or maybe didn't even have any ties. Just were like, oh, this is a senseless gun violence. You know, like a However, they
like the other senseless gun violence,
like the other ones. Yes, unfortunately. But yeah, along those lines, right? I feel like it. They'll take broad narratives,
yes,
and speak to that. But something that's like, no, this has to do with.
So can I play ritual. Devil's advocate for a second?
By all means.
And I truly am playing devil's advocate here. But I've faced this even a little bit with Fourth. As I'll dive into these issues, just because we are close, we are family here. Mm-hmm. Advocating for Black Lives Matter, advocating for these things, and I've, you know, obviously been applauded in some sense, but I've also gotten pushback. Like, you don't know what you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
And so can I mean, in some sense, making any statement. I think it's a political statement initially, and it's that way for LeBron James, but it's also going to be that way for Peyton Manning. And I think it is a little bit of it's hard as a white person, and I'll just admit this, to say it takes a lot of time, effort to say, on one hand, I don't understand, but I want to understand, so let me be engaged in these conversations so that I can understand.
Sure.
And it's hard to make a statement. That is I'm not saying I understand, because they shouldn't and can't say that.
Okay.
Unless someone has a unique circumstance they can speak to that.
Mm-hmm.
I in no way ever feel like I can make the statement I understand. I don't. So, okay, so those statements are off the table.
Mm-hmm.
And then the statements of I don't understand, but I realize there's an issue here, mm-hmm. is really what's left on the table for me as a white person. I think athletes in general that can make a statement is, hey, I don't understand, but I know that I see a systematic issue here, mm-hmm. that needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. And all we are kind of, you know, causing is hate on all sides of the fence now.
Mm-hmm.
And generally innocent lives are being lost on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
Who don't deserve to be lost.
So I didn't want to cut you off.
So that, I feel like that's the statement that can be made.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I struggle if Peyton Manning does come out, I struggle to see how he's not going to get killed for, even by the black community, to say, we don't need you. We don't need your allies. Like, I feel like I have seen quote unquote allies be, even articles come out in the last couple of weeks of like, black community, we don't need the allies. Like, we need to deal with this ourselves.
So I think there's a few things that were brought up in that piece of what you just talked about, which I think are interesting, but I want to kind of pull on first. I would think was that, like, when you say that you've experienced it somewhat at Fourth, just to clarify, have you felt that internally among the staff, in terms of
Twitter,
the readership and audience of Fourth District?
Kind of pushing on me again. A lot of this is off the cuff, thinking out loud, and people interpreting that in different ways.
Absolutely, sure. I just wanted to be clear about that for us as well listening.
Yeah.
But I think that there becomes a point, yes, where allyship isn't enough.
Yes.
Okay. Where there has to move from some point of not just being an ally, but to being a fierce advocate once you understand what's going on in those ways. But I think there's people in various, there's various stops along that train to get there. Right. And so what we're talking about in sports is I'm not looking for the fierce advocate in Peyton Manning.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I'm not looking for someone to sit out there and to, you know, try to get curry audience with Congress to speak on behalf of, like, I'm not asking him that. He spends a lot of time shilling Papa John's pizzas, right? He can do that, right? Mm-hmm. Make your money. I get all that. That's fine. But I do think that when you, it's like this, man, like we work on Fourth District. If we are rounding up, let's say, what, 10 hours a week, maybe, mm-hmm. let's just throw that out there, right? Mm-hmm. But in that, we, like, I think you've learned more about kind of what we go through, or the history that we've had, or past experiences, or those who are friends of us. And I feel like I've learned more about your past and your experience with that. I think that it's really bizarre that in sports, when you're around someone for that long and you're on a team for that long with those many people, and sports is always heralded as the grand equalizer. It's mm-hmm. always heralded as this is where you go to, like, you know, where everyone's the same on the field and you do blah, 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 blah. And it's like, man, but like, you never think about what these people go through outside of, quote, the office, right? Outside of the dugout, outside of the huddle, outside of the, you know, the basketball court. And the fact that you are then never asked to speak to those things on behalf of these people that y'all travel, y'all shower, y'all, like, you're everywhere together mm-hmm. for 9 months out of the year, if that, right? And I just think I think that on those fronts, it's so bizarre that the black athlete is often saddled with this responsibility to not just carry the weight of the black community and be this voice for all black issues. And I'm always, you know, I'm always on the record, like, there's some of these, there's a lot of these athletes I don't think are qualified
yeah.
to speak to these mm-hmm. things, right? So it's also this unfair thing of like, man, do I want Pac-Man Jones out there speaking on behalf nope. of, like, of anything, right? So, but it's something that when you've reached such a level of stardom, like, we're not asking for the second string punter to say something. We're not asking for, you know what I'm saying, just a random DB. Like, we're not asking, but we're asking for the most visible stars. And when you're a visible star, you have to answer to a lot of things. You have to talk about a lot of stuff that, one, you're actually not qualified to talk for, but your celebrity makes you so visible mm-hmm. that you have to speak to it. And I'm just curious, how come it's never these issues?
Yeah, so now taking my devil's advocate hat off, like, I totally agree with you. I think the unfortunate assumption you're making mm-hmm. is that the locker room is not as racially divided as the rest of our world.
Fair.
And I would venture to guess that if you walk in that room, it looks like the high school lunchroom that you came from mm-hmm. and I came from, that you play sports with some of those dudes, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, and like your friends, you dab, you like, you say goodbye, but who you sat and ate lunch with that day were people that looked like you, talked like you,
yeah.
had the same experiences as you did. Mm-hmm. I was great friends with some dudes on my football team, but you know what? We never talked about anything other than football together. Mm-hmm. And that was just how I grew up. And I would venture to guess that that's probably what locker rooms look like, mm-hmm. Where there's some commonality in talking about girls, talking about these other things that, right. you know, are not hot button issues.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like the unfortunate unwritten rule of, like, you leave that stuff outside the locker
room. And it's tough because the people I'm speaking about are the leaders of those teams.
Right.
And this fact that, man, you're leading people that you don't know anything about.
Mm. Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
That's a huge problem. Like, you're the one that they're to look to, right, in these areas, and you don't know their life and or you have some distance that you're able to make between those types of black people and the ones that you encounter on, you know, like, it's just, I don't know. I don't want to put those things on these people. Right. I love Aaron Rodgers. Like, I think he's an amazing, like, right. I all of that. But it's just this weird, like, man, I don't think that there are any star athletes who are black who ever have the luxury that these artists have, that these players have. And yeah. I think that as an example, I'd throw up that when Golden Boy, right, when Brady mm-hmm. had a Donald Trump hat, like, in his locker room, right, there were so many people in the media who, like, protected the right that, well, his politics are his politics. He doesn't have to answer
right
what he actually feels about Donald Trump. And I'm like, dude, this is,
because y'all made everybody talk about Barack.
Like just he's wearing, he obviously knew what he was doing. He knows this hat is, like, very visible in this right. interview. Like, he can't answer a question. You can't ask him anything about that. Right. Like, what? You can't, with all the random nonsense and racist and xenophobic and fear hate mongering things that Donald Trump has said, you can't ask a question to this person who's wearing some hat that suggests he might be supporting a supporter, like, just a follow-up, like, so yeah. what is going on there? I just think it's garbage.
I think everybody should watch Remember the Titans.
That's what they should do.
Yeah.
Left side, strong left side.
Yeah. Do you think we'll see any moments, just venturing guesses, at the Olympics getting ready to kick off here in 2 weeks?
Yes.
Do athletes take a moment to kind of take a stand?
I think so. Melo's on the team. Melo's on the team. Mm-hmm. Somebody will. Honestly, I feel like it's probably going to end up being like maybe track and field, because there's some sort of like precedent there.
Yeah,
there's
history.
You know what I mean? There's someone in history there.
Talk about a white dude that is also in support.
No
one talks about the white dude in the picture, but he was 100% a part of that demonstration.
Right.
Absolutely. So, we're talking about the 68 Olympics, for those that don't know.
Right.
Tommy Smith and John Carlos and raising of the Black Power Fist during the award ceremony part.
Yeah, I think it'll probably be the women again.
That 4x100 team
I mean them or even like the WNBA somebody. Players for the USA basketball, for women's basketball. Like I mean
it's,
they step up.
Yeah, I mean I don't know, honestly. It'd be interesting to see. I just want them all to come home alive.
Without Zika.
Without a million things that are going wrong there right now. But nonetheless, man, that was that conversation having to do with like just that idea of advocacy in sports. And we're gonna end this part here and just move over to side B for our last little topic. So check it out.
When the curtains open, and I'm the maestro for this certain moment, trying to take it sky high, so go alert the stoners. Fear got your guy almost on the verge of blowing it. Bravos, I hear the hand claps, and I know that this here could be my last chance, and I can't ever remember having this chance last, and in this second, this moment here will be past tense. Man, I'm past tense, I'm on the edge of a classic, but slacking got me on the edge of a has-been. Too passive, gotta snatch this moment before I pass it, and face this test like Steve Nash and pass it. I would not be crippled, cast loaves in the oceans, gotta see ripples. Excuses are useless, tools that the fools pick, only got one shot, but it feels like a full clip. For this one moment, patiently waiting in line just to get on it. These players hating on me, I gotta let it go. Put me in the game, coach, I got some better goals. This game's so foul, it's sort of pitiful. Tell your people, go and grab a stone and get a free throw, and let them know I love the Lord. But sometimes it's like that, I love me more. Seek his applause, break all your laws. We tear the roof off, homie, we don't need no doors. So now, I stand on top of this. I have strength in my esophagus. Hear me roar like a young lion. A team called Iron, a product from New Zion. My confession ain't no fear in me now. Just like an usher, it's my job to move crowds. Once upon a time, I lived in a world that was bound by fear. Escaped his hold, now life's reset. Then I was given grace to break the enemy's net. It's time for the conquerors. Oh, it's my turn? Excuse me, the monster's up. Foe slaying, cruising in this monster truck. It's no playing, giving bruises in this Tonka truck. My circle's where the riders is. A couple Paul and Silas is, and Leonidas is. Kinda sickening how bold this virus is. No sniffling, but so cold like sinuses.
Make room for the misses, the crew full of misfits. Peruse your policies and hack through ISIS. aggressive. The truth to embassy, sneak food to your listeners. Pilots, provisioners, and suicide bombers. Musical monsters, martyrs, quick to die for a signer. Yeah, this is our moment. We're facing our fear, cause faith has appeared. So baby, we'll take you from here. Here.